that, the argument's going to be, what did the founders intend when they came up with birthright citizenship? This administration says it's an emergency now. It's completely out of control that people come here, have no legal status, and then have a child that's a complete U.S. citizen. They say it's got to stop. This president made it a priority on day one to issue that executive order. It may be a while before we know if that order survives on the merits, but we may get to those nationwide injunctions much sooner.
Shannon Bream speaking about what the Supreme Court is listening to hearing when it comes to President Trump's and his executive order, which puts an end to birthright citizenship the way that it has been implemented. A lot of people would refer to it as anchor babies. That's what's going to be heard. We're going to speak with Hans von Spakovsky about that in 18 minutes from now. How do you like that? 18 minutes, we'll have Hans on here and we'll discuss with him what the arguments are on behalf of Donald Trump's position and the administration's position, what the amendment actually says, and what he anticipates is the likelihood of Donald Trump winning this court case. I know a lot of people are very leery to predict what the Supreme Court is going to do, but we will wait and see. Ed Martin joins us at 1:25 as well, and we're going to talk to Ed Martin about what the left and what the Democrats have done with our Justice Department, or with the, I should say, the third branch of government, the judicial branch, where we see activist judges, we see activist prosecutors. He was not going to get confirmed for that D.C. prosecutor job, and he got removed from that. And as it says here in my paper, he is now the Trump weaponization czar. Is that really a legit title that he's got?
Yeah, that's what they sent me.
That's what he sent you, or that's what the administration?
That's what his people sent me.
Yeah, okay. We'll ask Ed Martin to define, what does Trump weaponization czar mean? He is an associate deputy attorney general as well. So Ed Martin will be with us at 1:25 and Tyrus at 1:05. And I don't really know that I can discuss this with him a whole lot on the air because it's much more of a visual thing. But have you seen Baby Tyrus on X?
Oh, no. No, I haven't.
You haven't?
Oh,
have you seen all the other baby stuff?
Oh, I've seen all the other ones.
I don't know. I
saw Steve Bannon today.
Yeah. Yeah, Baby Bannon. I don't know where the baby stuff started. Because, you know, to me, it started in politics. But that doesn't mean that it started in politics. That's just where it came across my life. But I watched the Sicilian showdown from The Princess Bride as babies.
Oh, yeah. I saw that yesterday, too.
Classic. I could just watch it over and over again. And the funny thing about, if you haven't seen this yet, get on X. If you've never been on X before, Twitter, this is the time to do it. I haven't seen it permeate any other social media that I have yet. I'm sure it will be, again, if it hasn't yet. And maybe I've just missed it. But artificial intelligence has captured absolute look-alike experiences, things you've seen, things you've heard. They can take words that have been said and speech by a person and then apply it to a baby version that you can absolutely tell is the person that it's mimicking. And the baby is as cute as can be and is sitting there and saying things like, you can watch Baby Trump negotiate with Baby Zelensky. That's fun. Especially in my world, that is the spice of life that I need injected into the muck and the grime of politics day after day after day. But they did Gutfeld and Emily Campagno and Gutfeld and Tyrus, and there's a comedian on there. I couldn't pinpoint the comedian that was with them. It's just the best.
I haven't seen the Gutfeld one. I've seen a lot of the other ones.
And he's sitting there with his hat on backwards and he's got his 5 o'clock shadow going on, and it's just so cute. My favorite ones, though, that I absolutely can't pass up on, the little baby videos, is Theo Von.
I was going to say the same thing.
I think Theo Von is like an attraction. Like, in and of itself, if you're not familiar with, now listen, like, Dad, don't partake in Theo Von. Dad, you're not going to think Theo Von is funny. Theo Von is not for you. You can dip in and see what kind of depravity your daughter's taken in. But if you're not my dad and you're anyone else, I don't know. Is there an age range? He's our age.
Is he?
Yeah. He's early to mid-40s.
I would say that you could still enjoy Theo Von if you're older than us.
Yeah.
But I don't know where the cutoff is either.
Have you ever watched somebody watch something that you think is absolutely hilarious? And it's not that they don't get it. They don't like it to the point where they're almost offended that you thought that they would think that was funny. I'm yeah. talking to you, Dad. Don't watch it. But everybody else should watch it.
But the baby ones are so good.
He's so cute.
And it boils down the best of Theo Von into a video, yeah. and then it's also a baby.
Yeah. So. Theo Von just says things that are so ridiculous, but at the end you're like, he kind of has a point. In some cases, he kind of has a point.
The one I think that you're probably referring to is the one where he's talking about how he wouldn't save a woman from a tsunami.
No, he said that the point is that he would never, one of his main turnoffs is a woman who can't swim.
Yes.
Yeah. And he alliterates that, for instance, the reason why it would be a big turnoff for a woman not to be a swimmer is because if there's a tsunami and she jumps on my back, he's like, and I quote, no.
I ain't no floaty.
Yeah, I ain't no floaty. Yeah. Check out the baby stuff. Maybe we could share some. Maybe I'll share some of these on the breaks on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Some of my favorite. I'll definitely get up Baby Tyrus and Gutfeld.
Oh, yeah, we got to see that.
Before, because I'm going to ask him about that. Did he confirm today?
He has not confirmed yet.
He's not confirmed. Every week, this is how the Tyrus thing goes. He's got a bazillion things going on, and we get him about 6 out of 10 times, which is fine, and we have that agreement with him. Like, this is our slot, and if he's got a big Fox thing, we understand that. Mm-hmm. But if he's there, we're talking Baby Tyrus.
Well, the baby videos are cool, though, because they all... I saw Jack Posobiec post one today of Stephen Miller. Now, the video itself was not much of one, because it's just a baby Stephen Miller, bald baby.
But it's his voice.
Standing there. But it communicates a point mm-hmm. in a cute way. And you're like, oh, I wouldn't have listened to that clip otherwise.
Little baby Trump, he'll have the blue suit on and the red tie. One time he had on the like orange trash suit or whatever it was. I don't know.
Doing the little okay hands.
This is why the internet is great. There are so many terrible things that exist on the internet. Of course, it's just a endless depth of knowledge if you want to learn about things. But the fun things, that's where I really appreciate it. And I'm just like laying in bed at night scrolling and just chuckling to myself. Like not even listening to them. Just looking at their cute little baby faces. They're so cute. How'd the show go yesterday? I was not here.
It was fantastic.
I thought you were going to say fair. Should I go home? Because I could go home today.
No. Fun. I think we are glad to have you here. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily love it when you're gone, but we make the best of it. And I tell you what, I think the best moment we had yesterday was talking to Joe Concha.
Yeah?
Yeah, we talked to him for a long time. At the end of it, he goes, are we doing a podcast? Is this the thing? I said, no, we just have nothing this hour other than you. So that was a good talk.
We didn't overstay our welcome, did we?
We might have.
Oh, great.
Well, he did at the
I'll
end say,
and apologize.
We'll come back next week.
Yeah, he said, let's do this again next week.
Okay. With you guys? Am I off?
I don't know. We didn't clarify.
Is it warm in here?
It's been warm.
Yeah. Is it warm? Okay.
It's warm outside.
So I got smacked in the face. Let's see. Today's Thursday. Not my week's all screwed up. Tuesday night, we're going to state track this weekend for my daughter. She's competing in the state track meet this weekend, which is exciting. And Tuesday night, after all the things get done, we go to work out at the track. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, man, my throat does not feel right. You know how it like creeps in at first?
It's a little drip.
And then, okay. My throat starts to hurt. And I woke up the next morning at about 5 o'clock and it felt like razor blades in my throat. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. So I tried to do all the things to make it get better and it was not getting better. So thank you for letting me have the day off. I had stayed in bed all day. I got out of bed to go get my kids from school at 3 o'clock and then came back home and crawled back in bed. And I was just thinking to myself, like, in this business, if I sound bad, that's not good. I can't come in and sound bad, but I at least still have a voice. You can probably hear it a little bit in my voice compared to normal, but it's not like I'm super hoarse or super scratchy or whatever. So I'm just going to soldier through. And I asked Ryan, I'm like, can you guys help me if I need help along the way? And he told me no. So then I was like, well, then I guess I'll have to come in and do it myself.
If you run out of steam at any point, I'm just going to have the folder open with all the stuff. All the stuff we've ever played, all the material, and we're just going to go to it.
It's just going to be a roast of me.
Yeah, kind of.
And I'm not going to be able to say anything to stop it.
It's kind of the idea.
But it being warm in here right now is tripping me out.
It's not helping.
I'm glad that you said it's warm because I haven't had a fever through any of this. And right now I'm going, I don't know if I'm good.
87 degrees outside. So the building
is catching
up.
Does it have to be 87 degrees in here?
Yes, it does. I mean, yeah, that's the way it works.
Okay.
So I'm here to help.
YouTube live chat poll. Okay. Did you have a clip for this?
Yeah, it's at the very bottom of the clip sheet.
Okay. Is it on my sheet?
Not the printed one.
Oh.
This is the first time I've seen the YouTube live chat poll.
Just right now?
Just right now. I didn't see it ahead of the show.
How come?
I don't know. I just
missed
it.
What were you doing?
It's great. I was actually doing a little X's and O's prep for tomorrow.
And tomorrow we have I think it's Point Pest Control,
yes,
right?
Yes, yep, Point Pest Control.
Okay, I cannot wait to have them in. Point Pest Control, my favorite people. Let's play this clip here real quick before I read you the YouTube live chat poll, because I still can't believe that this is real. Let's listen in here to Harris Faulkner.
Right, hearing at Capitol Hill, don't any of them know that Senator Cory Booker can stay up for 16 days to try to get some attention? Anyway, this image shows this hilarious moment when Democrat Congresswoman Debbie Dingell from Michigan was slumped in her seat. Her eyes were closed. Oh, my goodness. Democrat Congressman.
Did you see the town hall tweet on that?
No.
Okay, I'm gonna just push this back here a little bit. And Ryan, real quick, as Harris Faulkner is reading this, read town hall's tweet.
Debbie Dingell is not woke.
That's great.
Democrat Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky from Illinois was spotted taking a snooze in the hearing room. Uh-oh. Hello. Another clip from around 5 a.m. this morning shows Republican Congressman Blake Moore from Utah out cold.
Miss Tinney.
Slow pan.
Miss Tinney, no. Mrs. Fishbach. Mrs. Fishbach, no.
Uh-oh.
Mr. Moore. Mr. Moore.
Can we get this Mr. Moore quote for like an intro for Steve Moore?
Oh my gosh, he is out.
Oh, and he sits up.
Mr. Moore, no.
So this is a bipartisan problem, and this is like in a day's time. What is going on? The only thing that I'd like to know more information, and it might be out there, Mr. Moore has a sling on. So I wonder if he's got his arm in a sling, if he's injured, and if in some way, shape, or form, he's maybe medicated for pain, which can make you sleepy. Why are they falling asleep on the job? Gosh. YouTube live chat poll. Have you ever fallen asleep on the job? Yes or no? Don't answer yet.
Okay.
I'm going to just vote yes for Ryan. You have to. Don't tell. 2 o'clock hour, 2:05, we will discuss this and see if anybody here on the show has some stories to tell on themselves. Now, granted, have any of us ever done anything as important as represent an entire constituency in the House of Congress while we fell asleep? Not yet. But it is a bipartisan affair. Two Democrats and a Republican walk into Congress. Three of them fall asleep.
One of them's name was Debbie Dingell.
Debbie Dingell.
I just love that.
That kind of gives on its own.
Debbie Dingell. I love Debbie Dingell. Any story about Debbie Dingell, I'm in.
I need to know, though, your thoughts on the Annie Fry YouTube poll, like the comments of what you think should happen, because I would venture to say that more of us than we probably think have had an accidental snoozer for whatever particular reason. A little quick nap that maybe you didn't intend while you're at work, possibly. Can you do it while you're supposed to be voting in Congress is the real question. So, you know, looking at Scooter's comment right here, he said, they're human. They got tired and dozed off. That is a reality that a lot of people might really, if you really come down to it, and I think it's especially important that there are Republicans and Democrats doing this, so you can't just be like, the Democrats aren't even there to do their jobs. It's on both sides of the aisle, people. Let us know what you think on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. Hans von Spakovsky on Birthright Citizenship next.
Federal District Court judges, which are the lowest judges on the totem pole, they only are supposed to have jurisdiction over their particular area where they're seated. And in many states, for example, there may be two or three or more districts. in a nationwide injunction, the judge says, I'm ordering the government to stop what it's doing, and I'm ordering that happen everywhere across the entire country.
That's a lot of power.
Not just in my jurisdiction.
So this has happened. The president has signed so many different executive orders, but we've seen these nationwide injunctions implemented. How did this get to the Supreme Court?
Well, in this particular case, and a lot of people, I think, were believing that the case today was going to settle the issue of birthright citizenship. Is Trump correct or are the challengers correct? That's not why the case was at the court. What happened was liberals filed lawsuits against Trump's executive order in several different states, Washington, Maryland, Massachusetts, and judges in each of those states issued injunctions saying, yeah, you can't enforce this executive order. So what the Trump administration did is they filed an emergency request with the U.S. Supreme Court, not to decide the underlying issue, but to stop or stay portions of those injunctions. And they didn't even ask for a complete stay. What they simply asked for was they said, look, these injunctions should only apply to the named parties in the case. In other words, for example, in one of the cases, I think five pregnant women sued, and yet the judge said, in essence, well, this will apply to all pregnant women everywhere in the country. And what the government is saying is, no, that's wrong. The injunction should only apply to the people who are actually in the case. And that, by the way, is in accord with prior Supreme Court precedent. Anyway, at one point, I think it was Sotomayor was saying, oh, you guys, you, the government, you're violating all these prior Supreme Court precedents. I don't know what she's talking about. That's wrong. It's these judges who are actually violating prior Supreme Court precedents.
So Hans von Spakovsky speaking with us right now, of course, a legal fellow with Heritage Foundation and an expert there on topics like these. The Supreme Court ruling, you're saying that at the end of this hearing, there's not going to be a definitive ruling on birthright citizenship. Is that correct?
That is exactly right. What's going to happen is the Supreme Court is going to issue an order either allowing the injunctions the way they're issued now to remain in place while remember, these were preliminary injunctions. So there's still going to be a trial. Then it gets up to the courts of appeals before it eventually gets to the Supreme Court. Or they're going to cut back on the injunctions that have been issued the way the government is asking for it. By the way, you know, Sonia Sotomayor, she, ever since she's been on the court, she has been the rudest, nastiest justice on the court. When somebody shows up in front of her, either representing the Trump administration or any conservatives, she always asks the nastiest questions.
Really?
And acts as if, and she did it again today to the point where the Chief Justice stopped her because she kept interrupting the lawyer for the Justice Department and wouldn't let him finish answering questions.
But what, I mean, just in that line of information, what happens, like, what happens to an unruly justice?
Well, the only thing that can happen is the Chief Justice steps in and tries to make them behave. And in this case, Sonia Sotomayor, she subsided when, once again, Sotomayor was interrupting the answer that the government's lawyer was trying to give, a guy named John Sowers.
Yeah.
And the Chief Justice came in and said, excuse me, but I'd like to hear his answer. So she subsided after that.
Hush, hush. He needs to learn to give those, like, mom church eyes over to the just like, daggers
right
over that way. This, a little bit more on that, just because I'm curious. Can Congress impeach a justice?
Oh, sure. And a very long time ago, at the very beginning of the nation, there was an attempt to impeach a Supreme Court justice. Yeah, everyone who is an officer of the United States And either the judiciary branch or the executive branch can be impeached by Congress.
Yeah. I'm not suggesting that that's what needs to happen, but I was just curious where the check and balance was.
Hans, this is Ryan. Yeah. I was listening to Fox News today. They were playing clips from these hearings, and Amy Coney Barrett was one that they were playing, and I listened to it very intently and then came away going, I still have no idea what I just listened to. Thank God we're talking to Hans today. Is there any indication that you got from this hearing of where the justices stand on this issue, or is it just wait and see?
Well, there's no question where the three liberal justices stand. Kagan, Sotomayor, Brown, Jackson. They clearly, if they could, I'm sure they would rather not just rule on the procedural question here, but basically rule entirely on the merits of the birthright citizenship case. They're not going to be able to convince, I don't think, the six other justices to do that. But how will they come down on it? I really couldn't tell from the questioning.
And then furthermore, since you mentioned it with the birthright citizenship, is that something that we eventually will get from the Supreme Court, just not now?
Yes, we will. No matter what happens in today's from today's oral arguments, yes, we are going to eventually get a decision. And like I said, the claims by Sotomayor and others that the Supreme Court had already decided this, that is just not true. The most the Supreme Court has ever said on this was more than 100 years ago in a case in which they said that the children of permanent resident aliens are U.S. citizens. But they have never said that the children of illegal aliens are also considered citizens. So like I said, claims to the contrary, that's just not the case.
Hans, the initial intent of this amendment that established this citizenship, can you tell us the history behind why this was needed as an amendment to define this in the amendments? For people who have heard the arguments back and forth, I think that the original intent is an interesting discussion.
Yeah, well, right after the Civil War, Congress passed a Civil Rights Act that was intended to make slaves and the children of slaves citizens, because as you'll recall, in one of the most infamous bad decisions of the Supreme Court prior to the Civil War, the Supreme Court had said that slaves could never become citizens. Republicans who controlled Congress during Reconstruction were afraid that, oh, well, we've done this with a federal law, but that federal law could be overturned. So they passed the 14th Amendment. And the key to it is it doesn't just say you have to be born in the U.S. to be a citizen or naturalized, but it also says you have to be under the complete jurisdiction of the U.S. And that means, according to people who sponsored the amendment at the time, you owe your complete political allegiance to the U.S. government. Children of illegal aliens don't fit that because, in fact, they are citizens. If two Mexicans are in this country illegally, they're, of course, Mexican citizens. And when their child is born here, that child is also a Mexican citizen. So that child owes their political allegiance to the Mexican government, not the U.S. government. And that's the problem with the claims being made by all these people that we only have birthright. Being born in the U.S. is the only requirement to be a U.S. citizen. It's just not true. Mm.
Hans von Spakovsky speaking with us right now. So on these two issues, the more current of the issues being the nationwide injunctions that have been implemented, do you feel like the Trump administration has a good shot at winning this case and limiting those injunctions to the districts with which they're ruled?
Yeah, I think they will. Look, it was very unusual for the Supreme Court to take this case. They usually don't have oral arguments after April, and yet they schedule oral arguments on this issue very quickly after this emergency appeal. And I think they realize that whatever decision they make in this case is going to have far-reaching results because of the nationwide injunctions being issued in all of the other cases, on all of the other executive orders that the president has been issuing, which, you know, you mentioned at the beginning of the segment. So, this this case is important to the birthright citizenship case, but it's also important to all those other cases that have been occurring all over the country.
Hans, we love talking to you. Thanks for being with us. We know that the Supreme Court season is going to be heating up here very soon, and we will be leaning heavily on you and your expertise. Thanks for being with us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. Hans von Spakovsky is a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, former FEC commissioner, and author of Our Broken Elections, How the Left Changed the Way You Vote. All right. Wiggins America, when we come back.
Wiggins America, when we come back.
How is it today?
It's full.
Do you do Wiggins America when I'm out and you're me?
No. Ethan has been doing it, and we play the Ethan Open for Wiggins America.
Yeah. And how does Ethan do? Like, because I know how Ethan does when you're gone.
Excellent.
Yes.
I hate to hear that. So when you're gone, mm-hmm. The dynamic is that it's kind of my job to throw Ethan off of his game because he's doing my segment.
So you are trying to make sure he looks bad.
I don't know that I want to make him look bad.
Yes, that's what he's trying to do.
You know, because overall, I want the show to benefit from him not hitting a home run.
The door.
I've never seen
he came in
the
like
studio
Kramer.
Door be thrown open that big. Wiggins America next, and
yes.
At the end of Wiggins America, we'll let Ethan assess how well you did.
Oh, I don't love that.
I do.
I do.
We'll be right back. I'm the only one of me. So if you join us on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, you can vote. And there's baby Tyrus. We've got some of the baby video. There's no sound, but I watch so many of these just like this because I just adore them. So we're going to get to Wiggins America here in just a second. The YouTube live chat poll for today is, have you ever fallen asleep on the job? Yes or no? I understand that maybe your job was working at a Wendy's and it was slow and you fell asleep in the French fries or something, maybe. That's a specific story from Ryan's past.
I'd never know. No.
You're like, it was the baked potatoes.
I would never fall asleep and put my face in grease.
We want to know if you've ever fallen asleep on the job, because there are three congressmen. They were all within a 24-hour period, right?
I don't think they had to dig deep for these. No, I think this is pretty
cool. No, I think it all happened at one time. The first one's name?
Debbie Dingell.
You just want to say it.
I don't know the other two.
That's
one was Moore.
Name.
One was Moore, and then the other was another woman from Illinois.
Oh, was she?
Yes. But why are these people falling asleep? And have you ever done that? Annie Fry YouTube channel in the live chat portion of the live broadcast. And in the meantime, throughout the course of the show, we're just going to show you cute baby versions of adult people.
It's wonderful. I'm not criticizing the baby videos.
Yeah.
But isn't it a little bit surprising to you? Maybe it's not at all. That we went, oh my gosh, AI. We finally have AI.
And this is what we do with it?
And we just get baby videos of Kilmeade.
I'd rather have this than the overtaking robots.
I agree, but I thought that AI would be something that helped you live your life differently. And so far, it's just videos.
I'm not an expert on AI, but I think that there are other things that AI has done other than videos of the Gutfeld show looking like babies.
I mean,
they
make the Simpsons opening look like it's from the 1950s. And you're like, well, that's really cool. Okay, what is that? How did that change my life, though?
Yeah, for sure. All right.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
All right, I got a whole bunch of stories here that make you go, what?
What?
The first
right
one.
Right on the mark.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you? Yeah, okay, never mind.
A little bit of a delay there, but we'll start with this one. McDonald's says it plans to hire 375,000 people this summer. The hiring surge is focused on staffing up to 13,000 U.S. restaurants as the company prepares to open 900 new locations over the next couple of years. I don't know. It doesn't say. It just says they want to grow. The thing is, they've been down the last couple quarters, and they think that it's because they're not hiring enough people.
The McDonald's index is like, it's a thing that people follow to measure all of fast food. But
this
like
is news to me. I don't
the
know
success,
this.
I was listening to this on Fox Business, I think Chef Gruhl was talking about this on Fox News also. But the question as to whether people are eating less McDonald's, are they eating less? Maybe they can't produce as much, which is kind of what this is saying. There are questions about, are people starting to think more about what goes into their food?
Mm-hmm.
You know what beef tallow is right now because of Big Beef Tallow. Is that having an effect? Are people starting to think healthier than they have been in the past? Maybe fat is out.
They're saying they're going to focus more on customer service, which is terrific.
Please. I just want to go places and not when people are nice to me be like, well, that was refreshing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just like expecting to drive through and have the French fries tossed into my car. Or, you know, like I said, I have had, you know, we had a little conversation about scooters and how pleasant scooters is to go through. And I've been to scooters. Well, I've been a few times since then, since we had that conversation. Yep. Nope. Not at all. And they told me that people are coming through going, I heard the Andy Fry show talking about you guys. And I have people messaging me back saying, I went to scooters and they were so friendly.
That doesn't surprise me.
I'm not being paid to say this. And folks, I would love to be paid to tell you about scooters. I would maybe, the goal would one day to be able to break even.
Oh, I'd do it for chais.
My endorsement of scooters is completely based on my patronage of a coffee shop that makes great coffee and gives it to you with a smile. And then that's the transaction. That's it. Mm-hmm. You order your coffee. You get your coffee. They're pleasant. You go about your day. There's no extra commitment or flair.
Do you get the same thing every time you go?
Yeah.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. I start to order and they go, hi, Annie.
Oh, yeah? I started switching it up.
The closest thing to switching up the order is if I get a breakfast sandwich or not. I recommend the bacon ciabatta sandwich.
What is your order?
Oh, gosh. You guys are going to judge me, which should be different than usual.
Well, Ryan judges you every day, so it's fine.
Extra large, iced, non-fat, sugar-free vanilla latte with a extra shot and protein cold foam, no added flavor. That's just one drink.
Wow. That's overwhelming.
Yeah. And they know that. They keep suggesting things to me about how to like...
Do you want
to
make it dirty?
No.
That's what they always
don't
ask me when I order a chai.
Don't ever say that to me again.
You want to make that dirty? I was like, no, ma'am. I thought this was the healthiest
establishment. It's super hot in here right now. What is going on?
But that's actually kind
of
why I
didn't know this
go,
was
too.
That kind of place.
It's not. Somebody tell him.
Apparently it is, according to
don't forget,
Mr.
Ethan
Wiggins.
Is grading you. Go on.
Oh, it's not going well.
One more fact about this story with McDonald's. McDonald's is one of the biggest U.S. employers, so when they are adding people, that is a good sign.
Yeah.
With
I'm
the company
surprised to hear that.
Estimating that one, the company says this, that one in eight Americans have worked for McDonald's. Isn't that amazing?
What?
One in how many?
One out of every eight people in America.
Have any of us worked at McDonald's?
I don't think so.
We need to find four more people.
But.
Is that Daniel out there?
Mm-hmm.
Go see if he's ever worked for McDonald's. Be right back.
Be five.
Report back.
And
there you go.
I've never worked at McDonald's.
No! Go ask three
listening.
More people. Go
he
ask
said,
three more
no.
people.
I've worked at McDonald's. Friends or no.
Man, we're getting close and we still haven't found somebody here.
I don't know if that's good or bad about radio.
Brad, being the one person in the room, I know you have worked fast food.
Yeah.
We never ask this question. What is something good about working in fast food?
Makes you know that you don't want to do that for the rest of your life.
No, I was looking for real good.
We found always a positive at least.
Helps form future life choices.
Yeah. No. Well, it teaches you responsibility, being on time. You know.
I wish
that
we
sort
could
of
run
thing.
That McDonald's as a poll and see if we get one out of eight of our audience.
Ooh, that's a good one for tomorrow, especially Friday poll.
Friday poll.
There's nothing refreshing about working at fast food.
Yeah, there is. It's
nice cold drinks. It's refreshing.
Refreshing is, yeah, it teaches you things like responsibility being,
it's a job. It's better
first,
than sitting on your duff.
Yeah, it's a first job for the last time. No, but you get I didn't at my store, but I got a huge discount.
On Taco Bell?
That's a plus.
Yeah, Taco Bell.
In the
yeah.
90s or the 2000s?
Yeah, late 90s.
Everything was less than a dollar than any, weren't it like man. 69, 79, 89 cents at
those
that time?
Those cheese roll-ups
yes.
had to be like a dime.
Cheese roll-ups yeah. didn't exist then, I bet.
Oh.
Did they exist?
Oh, yeah, they did.
On the okay. menu?
My favorite part about working at Taco Bell was inventing food because, you know, when you go to Taco Bell, everything...
How many more options can there possibly be?
Oh, man. Well, they didn't have chimichangas at Taco Bell, but they had a deep fryer, and they had the 12-inch flour tortillas, so you just made it, rolled it up, and dropped it in the deep fryer, made your own chimichanga.
Taco Bell would probably be one of the most dangerous ones to work at, right? As far as just temptation.
Oh, man.
Right.
The other thing
I worked
that
at
I loved,
Annie's Frozen Custard, so I worked
worked
around,
that on purpose?
No, it was an accident. I just kept showing up at the wrong place.
They kept trying to pay her. She's like, stop, stop.
My name is literally Annie. I have to work here.
No, I did. I loved that job. And go to Annie's in Glen Carbon.
I love
well,
Annie's.
Well, ask you the best same question then. What's a positive about working at
learning
at
customer
like
service from that angle. I would like, there are times where people are super rude or super slow or super new. And they're bad at their job. But if I'm frustrated, I know how I will never treat people. Mm-hmm. Like, the only way that I would ever get attitude-y with somebody is if they throw an attitude at me first. And you mentioned a Buffalo Wild Wings situation. I can't remember. I can't remember. I apparently have blacked that out. But I remember we sat there forever. We didn't get all of our food. And then we were waiting for our check, and they wouldn't even bring our check or something.
Yeah, it was not good.
It's because you were so filled with rage that you forgot about it.
It was a long night. Like, we got there at 11 o'clock or something.
It was after the Tyrus event.
Yeah.
Event.
Holy cow.
But we were all still, like, on a high. We're like, yeah. We can't just go home, right? We got to get some chicken.
Yeah, let's do the late night thing. Waffle House.
No, literally, it was the only place that was open.
I think you're right.
And I had my whole family there.
Yes, you did.
Like, small children.
And me and Brad.
Yeah.
Small children.
Great.
What?
All right. The next one is a new Associated Press poll that says Democrats' optimism about the party's future has dropped sharply.
That's shocking.
I mean, we've never heard this before, but the numbers are kind of interesting. From this time last year, about 6 out of 10, so 60% of Democrats were very positive about the future of their party, which is kind of low going into an election. But now it's only 3 or 2, roughly, out of 10 say that they are positive about the future of the Democrat Party. The reason that I even pulled this article,
though, say, why does this make you go what?
Is that they interviewed a guy from Cahokia, Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
Who said, and this is a national story, who said, I'm not real high on the Democrats right now. To me, they're not doing enough to push back against Trump. So I turn the page, and it says, the Trump resistance leaders are Pritzker and Ocasio-Cortez. The AP saying that those are the two biggest resistance leaders
in the Democrat Party
right now. I just wanted to report on that in case you couldn't believe it. And there it is. Just a little delay from the computer. All right. Most parents fear that they're losing precious time while fighting with their kids about their digital addiction. So not even about the actual screen time, but just fighting about screen time. So the question is, how much do you actually have to fight with your kids over screen time?
I don't fight with my kids.
This says parents spend approximately, can you believe this, 96 hours a year fighting with their kids over screen time.
I don't fight with my kids over it. We don't have like a policed amount of allot screen time. And, you know, does screen time include, I don't even think it includes television. I think screen time is devices.
Okay.
For the most part. I think that's how most people would, quantify it. But we just, phones are supposed to be, when they're at home, you can go sit and check them where they're plugged in. But they don't get to walk around with them. I might, like, if we go out and one of the older two kids is watching the other kids, we'll let them have their phones with them or whatever since they're babysitting. But I don't fight with them. I definitely have a struggle right now with my 12-year-old, who's most of her friends are 14 or older, and they all have Snapchat. And we have not done Snapchat.
Peer pressure has got to be the hardest part.
You say don't?
Don't.
Why?
I don't trust other people.
Yeah.
Having grown up in the day and age where it was created, I've said this before, I grew up in the age where like so much of this was being created that parents that felt like had no idea what kids were getting into as far as just
you didn't even know
it
to
all
worry
coming
about
so fast and now seeing just like the dangers out there and what kids do. I mean, I feel like I'm going to be so protective.
I think
over
your whole generation is going to have such a better leg up on raising your kids because, you know, we got the internet. The internet came into existence when I was in junior high. You couldn't use any sources for a research paper through college that came from the internet. Like, you had to go get it out of a book. You could find it on the internet, but you had to source it from a book in order to include it. So we didn't grow up using this. It was never an important part of socializing. I remember Mark Zuckerberg is like a month older or younger than me. And I remember in my sophomore year when my roommate said, Annie, are you on the Facebook yet? And I was like, nope. And she's like, you need to get on the Facebook. And so I remember signing up for it and being like, okay, now what do I do? And it was just a bunch of people trashing people they knew personally.
Were you ever on MySpace?
You got to do this.
Yeah. Yeah.
MySpace was cool for a couple of years.
I just,
I worry about that a lot, and I have gotten closer to caving in on my daughter with Snapchat than I care to admit. But Ethan says don't.
I would not.
All right. Let's take a quick break, Tyrus, when we come back.